Once more into the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure.
We always claim it's exciting. For us, it is. For everyone else, please get your drool rags handy. We are now in for some boredom. We will talk about...
What? This is terribly exciting.
Economics for the next 2 hours.
This is terribly exciting. I mean...
This is at least as exciting as whether or not a baby has been named in Britain yet. I would say so anyway.
Well, at least as exciting as that. But, you know, I mean, early indicators suggest strong July for factories.
Factories having... Just think for a moment the whole concept of having a strong July.
I like that.
I mean, is it a muscle builder with that? The concepts that we use in our language are so amazing.
But July could only be a week long, in which case it'd be a week July.
1 week July? Or it could be.
That would be 1 week July,
or 4 week July.
Yeah, 4 week.
Factories. Let's tell them who we are
finish out my headline here. The Flash Purchasing Managers Index, compiled by data provider Market, advanced to 53.2 in July from a final June reading of 51.9.
We may be the only people present, either in hearing range or out, that find that at all exciting.
I don't know. It was in the Wall Street Journal.
Those are numbers. Listen to that. Strong.
Listen to those numbers. Very nice. People get excited about sports scores.
That's true, and they get excited about round numbers in the marketplace. I mean,
numbers.
Yeah, if you round it off, it's lots of zeros involved. It doesn't matter what it is.
It always looks sort of horizontal to me.
When people say Dow passes 10,000,
wow, it's very important.
Dow
right?
passes.
Well, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, as I mentioned earlier, and I'm Jeff, and this guy over here is
Jake,
and we are together. The Personal Wealth Coach.
Yes, we are.
Yes, which is kind of nice. And the Personal Wealth Coach has a dual identity.
Besides the two of us, who are the Personal Wealth Coach, there's a dual identity to the Personal Wealth Coach besides the two of us.
Absolutely.
Right.
Okay. Do we need to tell him anything else?
Will that be a...
And who disguised as a mild-mannered investment advisor?
Right. During the week when we're not doing radio program, the Personal Wealth Coach... actually is a SEC-registered investment advisory firm.
It's not on the weekend?
But during the weekend, it is both a radio program and an SEC-registered investment advisor.
But, like, people can listen to it on our podcast, on our website, so it still exists.
But not radio. Unless you think Wi-Fi is really radio transmission.
Well, yeah, that's true. So... You know, some of the internet goes over radio transmissions through microwave.
Yeah.
So
we've been on the radio constantly.
So we're 24/7.
Wow. I hadn't thought of that.
That's pretty cool.
We're as good as 7-Eleven.
Actually, what we're trying to tell you is we're supposed to disclose, and we're trying to make it interesting and exciting, that this is not just a radio program. We're also a wealth management firm down in Salado, Texas, that does things with people's investments and so on.
Yeah.
Anyway, the telephone number is to call in here if you would like to talk to us here, presuming that today is Saturday, July 27th. Now, if it's Saturday, July 27th,
that's
then...
also a big presumption that people care what the date is on
Saturday. Well, they do. The point is that when they call, if it's not Saturday, July 27th...
Maybe a rerun.
And they're listening to this, they're just going to get Marshall, or they're... the phone's not going to get answered or something.
Marshall's a nice guy. You could talk to him.
And
I'm just saying that most people, why would you want to know what day it was if you already know it's a Saturday? Why do you need to know the
date?
I've
thought about that.
I mean...
You know, does anybody really... Yeah, the point is, as I was pointing out in the office to one of our new employees recently, the proper answer to what day is it...
Today. You're right.
Time. The proper answer is where.
Well, even... There, it's today.
Yes, that's true. But
wherever
what is the,
you go,
somebody
it's today.
Said, what is the date? What is the time? The answer is where. Because, you know, a lot of people don't recognize that it's a different day in, for example, Japan than it is here. So the day is an ill elephant.
Is it? Different day right now? I think we're still a little early. For it to be a
somewhere
different day
it's
there.
A different day because when you cross
Samoa area, I
because
think
when
be
you
different...
cross the international date line,
that's where you take international dates.
But
if you're like, I'm going on an international date.
We're like 10 hours into the day, and I don't think there's 10 time zones between the date line and Japan. So I think...
Could be that it's tomorrow there today.
It is. It is tomorrow there today.
Which gives us proof that the world is not ending tomorrow because...
Because tomorrow's already started.
It's happening already.
And it is always already started. Therefore, tomorrow does come.
Yes.
It's just somewhere else.
See, that was my early warning system for
the
Mayan calendar. We just needed to check with Australia. Still going on. We're fine.
Yeah, that's good. Anyway, telephone numbers to call in here if you'd like to interrupt our reverie of irrelevance. That's a new one I just made up.
I'm not even sure it made any sense.
Okay. it would be 773-1400 if you're in East Bell County. Otherwise,
1-866-597-1400 anywhere else within the sounds of our voices.
And you can ask or make comments about anything that has to do with economics or the market or portfolio management or any of that other stuff. Which is a finance term, that the very technical finance
very
term.
Very technical stuff here.
Let's see. Did anything happen this week?
Not much, actually. Stuff happened, but nobody reported on it because I think all the reporters are on vacation.
Yeah, I actually read some stuff about that.
What, reporters on vacation?
Yeah. The market was even flat for the week, the stock market.
Everybody was on vacation.
You got it. And there were even some comments in Wall Street Journal about what's actually going on. They said Mark all on vacation at this point, and they left the second in command at the desk. And the command is follow the market. Don't be a hero. So if you ever wondered why things kind of stagnate about this time of year, it's because the people's decisions are smart enough to leave town. And New York. You know, somebody should do a study on that.
I think it's now broad enough that you could do a study on the summer and market behavior and
what
you find
is
that
the
volume goes down and the volatility goes up.
The higher the temperature gets on a given day, the lower the market goes or something like that. Anyway, that's... I like the way that the trader in Barron's put it. He said, the stock market finished little changed last week on a dearth of directional news.
A dearth of directional news. I think for proper alliteration, you need another D word there.
Well, actually, then it says other than earnings reports.
there was plenty
other than earnings reports. Right.
Well, this is an issue, and I'll bring up the first salient point of the whole conversation so far this morning. There is no more dearth of financial information this week or any other week.
It's not dearthy?
It's not dearthy.
But
there's plenty of information.
Right, but
there.
He didn't say financial information. He said directional news.
There you go. And what that means is that the reporters as well as the top people at the fund management and money management firms have all gone on vacation.
Yeah, I was just one of the articles that I typically read in Barron's on Saturday morning is up and down Wall Street because it's generally quite humorous. And I noticed it had a different person than usual writing it, Copen Tan, whoever Copen Tan is.
That's second string. That's what that means. Second string.
And he noted down at the bottom that Mr. Forsyth is on vacation.
Yes. And it's stuff like this that when people...
Stuff?
Yeah, stuff. Again, technical terms.
Right, right.
This is fascinating. I find it fascinating. Most of the people listening, or if there's anybody listening, is sleeping.
Yes.
Any given day when the market does something, the news media provides a reason. Sometimes it's a very obvious reason. Sometimes, yes, that is the reason why the market moved. There's no doubt about it because the Federal Reserve Chairman says something, and on his word, the whole market moves. Most of the time, however, the market moves because people are buying and selling because they're either retiring that month or because they want to buy a house or because they just sold a house and they're investing the money. Or any number of other reasons.
No, I think it's because Alan Greenspan inserted a definite article in one sentence.
Exactly. That is not the reason why the market moved. Most people involved in the marketplace had no idea that Alan Greenspan said anything on that given day. And
well, the ones with the really big quantities of money that
they
move around
really
quickly.
Yeah, they pay attention to that, but not to Alan Greenspan anymore.
Well, that was back when I was referring to this.
Yeah, but they
well, now it's Ben Bernanke.
Yeah, they even say that about Alan Greenspan today. And what I'm saying here is that the media needs to sell their media. They sell their newspapers. They sell their websites. They sell advertisements. They sell these things. And the only way you will turn to them when you need information is if they can tell you why something happened. The train in Spain fell mainly because the guy was asleep at the wheel. But we don't know why. We think we know why. We don't know why. We don't know why, people. The media tells us why, and then they're wrong, and they say, oh, wait,
well,
that
I don't know
why. This is the real reason why.
There is possibility that the fail-safe failed.
There's a possibility that this is why. And there yes. may be a possibility that this is why.
That sounds exciting.
And what it comes back to is that in most national news feeding frenzies, we hear a story come out, and it's wrong. Well, but it's the first one that comes out, so everybody covers it
right.
that way. And then for probably another couple of days, we don't realize it's wrong, and then it comes out that those stories were wrong. Well, think of that. These are the same reporters that are covering the marketplace. But we don't look back on the reason why the market moved on Monday and say, those stories were wrong. The reason the market moved on Monday was this, because it's already Tuesday
mm-hmm.
or Saturday, and we don't care anymore.
Well, actually, this week, as far as the stock markets were concerned, we could come out. This is, I've always wanted to do this.
I want to know why the stock markets were concerned.
Well, as far as our concern about the stock market
was. I want
was,
the media to tell me why the stock markets are concerned.
The media or the medium?
Yes. Okay, so go ahead. As far as this week is, go ahead. Yes.
We could come out with a headline. This week, nothing happened.
And therefore, nothing happened. I don't think anybody will read our newspaper.
You don't think so?
It would be like a three-page or a three-page newspaper with two words on it.
Nothing happened
nothing
this week.
Nothing happened.
Anyway, you can tell when it's been a slow news week on Wall Street. The headlines are that that there's not a lot of traders on Wall Street. The critical things like that. And Angie's List is the headline in the Trader.
Yeah. If you go back a month ago, we have a week coming up right now that would have been massive headlines a month ago.
What's that?
Well, if you recall, every headline for every month going back since probably 4 years ago, it was the Federal Reserve is going to meet and we're going to have reports on earnings and jobs. Well, that's coming out this week.
Really?
Yeah, that's happening this coming week. And people say there's not a lot of news. But if you go back just a couple of weeks ago, that was enough news to fill all the headlines. Not this week. This week, everyone's on vacation.
Yeah, well, that's the way life is. Well, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and we actually do have a few things to say a little later on in the show.
Hopefully, we have a few things to say right now as well.
Well, there's some good news. The pace of new home sales rose 8.3% in June from a month earlier,
mm-hmm.
up 38% from a year ago. And
well, I can understand that.
Really? Why would you think the recession is still underway?
Because there's different definitions. The economic definition of a recession is only while the economy is shrinking. So if we've had any growth back, but it's not as good as it used to be. If you had a job that was paying you $80,000 a year, you lost the job, and you're now making $60,000 a year, but the economy's doing better, it still feels like a recession.
Yeah, and probably the person who is seeing a decline in their income, noting that all of their friends have declines in income, is also a person who's very frustrated and worried about inflation.
Right. Which is backwards because what we've just described is a deflationary yeah. trend.
And as a matter of fact, that's another thing that I just read an article this morning in the Wall Street Journal. Well, actually, it was in the Wall Street Journal. It's called Real Time Economics. It is the blog that's part of the Wall Street Journal, and they decided to do a little digging around to find out if there really was any inflation out there. And there is a website where there's a blog where it's called Billion Prices. and they literally try to achieve a billion price samples every week.
Price samples of what?
Of things for sale at the retail level.
Like Twinkies and
like everything. I mean,
chewing gum.
They theoretically, and it's actually around the world when they use the term billion, there's millions in the United States of price sampling that they do each week. And they have made an astonishing discovery. Their numbers almost precisely match what the Commerce Department
the CPI.
Consumer Price Index.
So what we're saying is that there are just a few things that the government still kind of does well.
Yeah, well,
not many of them, but some of them.
And they didn't exclude food and fuel. So what they did is they did an average. They simply tried to go through and figure out what people buy and took several million of the largest volume purchases. In other words, the number of purchases, not the dollar value, but the number of purchases.
Right.
And said, well, maybe that's the issue. They're purchasing. The reason people think there's inflation is because they're purchasing a lot of little things that have gone up in value that the Commerce Department isn't tracking.
No, that's not the
case. And
in
fact, it turns out that when you average out all the purchases, the millions of purchases a week that they track, that inflation is running about between 1% and 2% year over year. And that's below the Federal Reserve's target. And it was interesting that their conclusion is that is probably going to keep the Federal Reserve from tapering down their bond purchases anytime soon.
This is something that I think is important because we talk about inflation and deflation a lot, but we really don't regularly explain what that means.
We don't?
No, sometimes, but it's been long enough now that we're just assuming that everyone that's listening, if there's anyone listening, knows what we're talking about. Inflation just means that when there's more money being created than there is value being created. So people are just, because there's more money, they're able to apply a higher price to the same product.
And
deflation is the opposite of that.
And I always then, when I explain this to somebody in the office, get the response, well, how about all the trillions of dollars the Federal Reserve printed?
Okay. Well, let me rephrase that. Let me come back in. Well, I won't even rephrase it. I'm just going to say exactly what I said a minute ago. When there is less money being created than there is value being created, we have deflation.
Deflation.
And while the Federal Reserve, people call it printing money, QE3, what's happening right now, this wonderful thing where the Federal Reserve is buying bonds on the open market from American citizens.
Da, da, da.
And they're pumping all this money into the economy, and people go, this is going to create inflation. They're creating less money in the economy than the value that's already being created.
Mm-hmm. That's
what deflation means.
In this case, they're actually creating money to replace the money that disappeared.
Right, and they're not replacing 100% of that money.
No.
And this is the thing that if people are saying, well, how does money disappear? If money is created or disappears, is destroyed in the same process, loans. If a bank gives you a loan and you pay it back over a 30-year period with interest, that interest represents new money because the bank really only gave you money and you gave them more money back. That is the true creation of money. When the bank requests that the Treasury prints money, if we go back decades to before it was electronic money, it was still written on ledgers. So most money was just written down. Most money was not paper, even back before we had electronic money. So when we think of paper money, that's never been the majority of the currency. Most of the currency is in bank accounts. It's sitting in a bank somewhere. That means that there's really not money there. It's just numbers. There's numbers on a ledger somewhere that says this is the amount of money that's there. When you pay back a loan over time, the bank has more money than when it started. That's the creation of money. If, however, you don't pay back your loan, money's created when you pay back the loan, and it's created with small amounts, the interest, which right now interest rates are very low, so very small amounts of money are being created here. If you don't pay back the loan, then a large sum of money disappears, not just the interest that would have been created over a long period of time, but the principal disappears. The money itself that was on the ledger at the bank that said this is how much money exists in the world, they have to write that down. They have to say this is now a lot less money than it used to be.
And which is why it's called a write-down?
That is why they call it a write-down.
How about that?
It's amazing that we actually use words that mean what they mean. That's why we use stuff so much, because it means a lot of good things.
Right. Well, or bad things in the case.
So what we're doing right now, or what the Federal Reserve is doing right now, is they're buying back these bonds that are close to default or are defaulted. So people hold these bonds, and then people are delinquent on their payments. And when they bought the bonds, or they gave the bonds out to people, they made these loans to people. Say they made the loan of $100, and now the Federal Reserve is coming in and buying that loan back, which is valued, the loan itself is valued at maybe $20, because nobody knows if they're going to pay on it. The Federal Reserve is coming in and saying, well, I'll buy your $20 now loan that was originally $100. I'll buy it from you for, we'll say, $70. And the people holding the loan go, oh, yeah, I want 70. It's better than 20. It's not 100, though. So what the Federal Reserve is pumping into the market, giving money back to the marketplace, is less money than used to be there. That does not cause inflation. If they did it at a time when the bonds were still worth $100 and they said, I'm going to buy it from you for $120, that's going to cause inflation. That puts more money into the economy than disappeared from the economy. What the Federal Reserve is doing with QE3 is trying to balance out the recovery, where people are creating new things. They're making things that didn't exist before, and people are finding ways to pay for that, with trying to fix some of the damage that was done prior in the Great Recession.
Anyway, the thing I was talking about, if you want to, you're certainly welcome to go look at it if you want to. It's by the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. It's called the Billion Prices Project.
Wait a minute. Massachusetts Institute of Technology?
MIT, right.
Wait a minute. I think I've heard of them before.
You may have. Yeah.
Okay.
But it's called the Billion Prices Project. You can Google it and find it. And basically, the students and professors at MIT decided to go out and sample all across the economy and see if they could find that the government was hiding inflation. And it turned out that, nope, they're not hiding inflation. There's just not any out there. And this is a critical issue. A lot of us remember back in the late 70s and early 1980s, and actually going through a lot of the 1980s, when we had some pretty high inflation. And that has the potential to destroy the health of an economy. Deflation will do it much quicker. So keeping a balance between the amount of money available in the system, and that's a very complex issue, and the amount of goods and services available in the system results in, if somehow you could maintain a perfect balance, which a lot of people think is impossible. I happen to agree with them.
I tend to agree as well.
Then you'd have zero inflation, zero deflation. The fact is, economies don't do very well in a zero inflation, deflation environment. That's a lot of studies have come out on that. In fact, they do considerably better with a little bit of inflation, about 2%, which is why the Federal Reserve has targeted that. And those who think, well, if we just went back to gold, well, if the gold standard was in place today and we're using gold for money, we would have seen between a 30 and 40% drop in increase in the value. We would have seen massive deflation.
Right. Originally, we would have seen massive deflation, and now since then, since about a year and a half ago,
We would have seen massive inflation as the price of gold went up. Because as the price of gold went up, any given, let's say you had an ounce of gold and that was $35, which is back in the, quote, good old days, end quote.
Yeah.
So your $35 gold piece that you had in your pocket, would have risen in value. I guess that's the deflation side of it. Would have risen in value.
It still would have been $35, but the $35 would have bought a lot more.
Right. You could buy a lot more stuff with it. Well, I guess we're seeing the inflation of gold at this point.
Right.
You're right.
Now it's going the other direction where that $35 buys a lot less if it were just gold.
It's interesting. The only place we're seeing inflation is in gold.
Right. So what we're looking at here.
That's really interesting if you think about it just a moment. In the last year, gold has inflated about 30%.
Uh-huh.
Whoa. That's pretty impressive. And by the way, we'll get into the next thing. We were on gold right now. I've got another subject, but that's...
Yeah, gold by its nature, because it's a limited quantity, doesn't grow with an economy. So the more the economy grows, the more deflation you have. And people think, well, deflation, that just means the price, you can buy more with your money. Why is that a bad thing? Unfortunately, what it means is that most people who have mortgages have a 30-year or 15-year, we'll even say 15-year mortgage. If in your lifetime you have a 15-year mortgage, you just got it, and deflation occurs, and you can buy more with the money that you have, so your boss lowers your pay to make it equal to what you can buy before with that. And I go, okay.
Because he has to lower the prices of what he's selling.
Right, because that's what deflation does. If you can buy more with your money, then the money's worth more, which means that you can lower the prices, but that means you have to lower the pay for the people. You know, the employees' pay gets lowered, but the mortgage payment is still the same. That's a problem. That's a big problem.
Of course, a person could say, well, you know, just don't have a mortgage. But the problem...
just buy everything with cash.
The problem compounds in that if prices are going down, that's deflation, then the people who are selling things, the retailers, have what's called a squeeze in their profit margins.
Yeah.
And so they start laying people off.
That's deflation.
So they can reduce expenses. Because the easiest way to reduce expenses, the largest component of expense in almost every business,
people,
is the employees. So you start, so the employer starts laying people off, and you have fewer and fewer people working. And
for some reason, even when there's lots of deflation, people don't like to have their pay cut. They get upset while they're working there. You just lowered my pay, even though it's the same pay they were getting before. If you think of deflation, they're upset because you lowered their pay and they're still doing the same work. So it's easier, actually, for businesses to lay off. You get less hard feelings.
Well, people also don't like it when they don't get raises.
Correct. Even if, because we're used to raises happen every year. Well, no. Not if you don't have inflation. If you're doing the same work, if you're making the same bolt tight on the same car. Yeah, we're going to go back to widget making, if that's even better. If you're making exactly the same widget and the widget's price has gone down, even though you're still doing just as fine a job, why should you get a raise?
Mm-hmm.
And that is one of the economic principles that is hard to understand by most government officials.
Well, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and if we haven't bored you to tears yet, you're welcome to give us a call. Telephone number 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400, and that includes people that even are bored to tears at this point. You can call,
you probably
and cry.
Create some excitement in here by changing the subject to something you're interested in.
Yes.
And we'll be back on the other side of these important on Square.
Realtors have expertise in land.
We're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. Telephone number's in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
Well, in the midst of this slow summer, what is it, No Directional News Week.
Right. A dearth of directional news.
This slow summer week in which there was a dearth of directional news. By the way, you could go back in our podcast probably for the last...
The last
15 years.
Every July at this point.
And we will say there's a dearth of... We never used that term before, I don't think. I like that term, a dearth of directional news.
We should just replay July every year. We just do one July and talk about...
It works for Ed.
It works for Ed.
Hey, there is the International Monetary Fund, which...
IMF.
Right. You are?
Well, that could be a bad statement, actually.
Okay, yes, well...
Yeah, the IMF...
They were doing a study of the United States economy, and they made an astonishing discovery. I think, actually, one of them was probably driving down I-35 or something and listened to our radio show.
Nope. That's probably the easiest way to do the study is just listen to us.
It said that the U.S. production of durable goods, which are really important things like computers, motor vehicles, machinery, and so on, actually returned to the levels of 2007, the pre-recession levels, at the end of 2011.
Yeah, we've been growing that ever since.
And what they said, they're brilliant PhDs in economics.
Oh, yes.
It is a result, the IMF said, of a decrease in labor costs relative to those of emerging markets. Cheaper energy produced by the shale and oil, shale gas and oil boom, and a depreciation of the U.S. dollar.
So basically, what we've been talking about for the last since 2011, they had to wait till now to say it, but we've been saying that for.
They had to listen to a lot of our shows before they could actually piece together in the midst of all of our silliness.
A lot of the people at the IMF are UN types, and so they don't speak English directly.
Wait a minute. U is the opposite of I.
Right, and
so IMF couldn't be at the UN.
Couldn't be. No.
No. It's either I or U.
It's the translation issue. I think
it belongs to Apple because it begins with I.
It's funny that we've got the World Bank and the IMF.
They're different things.
They are very different. I mean, they're different, but
they're not part of the United Nations.
No, they do kind of the same thing, and one of them always has an American in charge, and one of them always has a European in charge.
That makes perfect sense.
The World Bank is generally run by a European.
Mm-hmm.
The IMF is generally run by an American.
Uh-huh.
Now, something to be aware of here is, I may have those backwards.
I think you have them backwards.
About
because there's a French woman in charge of
IMF
right now.
Yes, I had that backwards.
And I don't think she's an American.
French lady is not American. No.
Right. And it was a French man who was
now,
in America when he lost his job.
Yes, he's in trouble for many things right now. But the money that they use to prop up economies across the world to give loans and things, about 90% of that comes from America.
Mm.
And the Europeans are very upset that the World Bank is being run by an American, and they think that there should be equal opportunity for Europeans involved there, and they think it's just right and fair that the IMF is run by a European, but that Americans shouldn't have the corner on the market for the World Bank.
Well, this is the interesting thing to me about the IMF report. The IMF is not generally particularly pro-American.
No, it isn't. In fact, it's the other way around.
It is run out of France, basically, at this point. And one of the things they said is that there are basically three levels or three groups of nations when it comes to manufacturing in the world. Obviously, the developing or emerging markets, which are increasing their industrial output rather quickly, but they tend to level off once they have reached a certain level, and some of them are doing that right now. Then you have a group where the efficiency and as a result, the industrial production is actually falling when compared with other nations. That's typically found in places like Europe. And then there is a third level emerging, which isn't an emerging market, oddly enough. In the United States, something unusual is happening. We are taking advantage of technology to produce more manufactured goods than we have ever produced before. And as a result of the labor-saving, cost-saving devices we're using, basically technological advances, and the education level we're able to put to work on those, meaning the people to run the computers and so on.
Right.
We are actually growing our manufacturing contribution to the whole world quite relatively quickly when compared to the other two groups. And, this is one of those little geeky things that I really get excited about. When you have an international organization that's not particularly pro-American, and they're saying that basically what is going on in America is working, it's working very, very well. And this is interesting, too, because there's another article that I read.
When you look at Europe, it's not working at all well.
And by the way, the IMF said it's the manufacturing capacity of the United States is growing and probably will contribute as much as 1% a year to GDP in the future, compared with like 0.2% in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why is that fascinating? Because here in the United States,
there's the feeling that
I read articles saying, "Oh, poo-poo, IMF report doesn't mean anything. It won't help for a renaissance of manufacturing in the United States because we still employ fewer people in manufacturing than we used to."
That's not what it's about.
Yeah, that's the whole point is, yeah, we do. And they saying until
there's a
problem
until
manufacturing
there.
Starts hiring more low-skilled workers to run their high-skilled computers.
This is the problem, and I'm going to probably offend some people out there,
okay.
Although with this listening audience, probably not so much. This is a
no,
problem.
No, I don't know. Your capability for
I'm
offense
great.
Is...
I can offend many people. The idea that the manufacturing industry exists to employ people is the same as the idea that the education industry exists to employ teachers.
It does.
That is not what it's for. It's for making things.
Ask any union.
And yeah, exactly. And the education system is there to educate people. Manufacturing there is there to create things which can be sold for a profit.
Well, that's your opinion.
And long term, if you do both of those things well, if you manufacture things for a profit, and you educate people well, that will provide employment. What are you? You're looking baffled and befuddled. We don't have any more commercials this hour, I think.
Well, yeah.
We usually have two big segments of commercials, and we actually get to talk all hour.
And I, you know, I was looking around for the second set of commercials to do, and I was looking at the computer. See, this is a classic example of a high... There's this high-tech computer sitting here, and there's this low-tech person, me, looking at the computer trying to figure out how to make it work.
It doesn't work. It doesn't work. Well, that's because there's nothing to play there.
Well, that I got it, finally.
But,
you know, I mean,
coming back to that offensive statement there, because it's very easy to take that and say, wait a minute. If we define a recession in our economy, now we have a definition that's been changed in this Great Recession to include employment. So employment is important in the grand scale of the economy. Without new employment, our economy has not recovered. This is a new thing. It's one of the measurement systems in the recession. It's just the way it is now.
GDP has recovered. Manufacturing has recovered.
Employment has not.
Goods and services produced in the United States has recovered. But we're not employing as many people as we employed in the past.
And
the total... wages, the total payroll is lower than it was in the past,
which means to most people out there, we haven't recovered.
And this is, by the way, for a person like me who's a student of history, I said, man, is this classic. This has happened to us before, quite a few times before. For example, in the 1920s, as we entered the 20th century, upwards of 90% of the people in the United States, well upwards, were engaged in some form of occupation that had to do with the manufacture and distribution of food.
Yes, agriculture, where we were growing
right.
chickens and corn and wheat
and
radishes
right.
and vegetables and
yes. full-time employed.
Turnips.
And at the end of the 20th century, that number was like 2.5%, and it's still shrinking. And I don't see anybody saying... Well, obviously, agriculture should get rid of those tractors
yes.
and those combines and go back to putting people in the fields picking cotton.
Think of all the milkmaids that no longer have jobs because they've been replaced
you
by those
it.
Big suction robots.
And you know what I heard?
What?
A lot of that business got shipped overseas. Those
oh,
jobs
my.
Went overseas.
Yes, I heard about that.
Because the milkmaids were in Europe and they wound up over here.
Yeah.
And then they disappeared. So obviously they must have gone somewhere.
What we tend to do when we have an inflection in the way we do business, in the creation of the things that we make for profit, is when we get better at it, people lose their jobs. When we get really all at once, if there's a big revolution that happens, whether it's the Industrial Revolution with tractors, we get really good at a few people doing the jobs of a lot of people. And there's always a painful experience right there because a lot of people were doing something that they will no longer ever be able to be paid for.
And fortunately, some people are taking this problem in their own hands. You didn't know about that, huh?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, we've been talking about the fact that one of the reasons that unemployment is so high, there's places in the United States, first off, there's places in the United States where jobs are available. Okay?
Yep.
And there's
lots
a lot
of places in the United States where jobs are available.
But there's also lots of places in the United States where there's huge numbers of unemployed people.
Yeah, there's just no jobs in some places.
And then there's another piece of bad news.
What's that?
The population of Detroit has shrunk by 25% in about 2 years.
The reason for that being?
The people leaving their houses and everything behind to go where the jobs are.
Right.
Which is, as horrible as the bankruptcy of Detroit is for some people, it's really a good thing, because what it means is, if you look at the underlying reason for the bankruptcy, it's the same thing we were talking about. Detroit is a heavy manufacturing city. There are many, 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 many fewer people being employed there in heavy manufacturing, even though the manufacturing level, the cars, for example, we're now manufacturing more cars than we were before the recession. But
we're doing it with less people.
We're doing it with a lot less people, and the people who are there are getting paid less.
Yeah. So let me come up with 2 points here.
But let me finish this thing here. At the same time, we have this horror story going on of Detroit going into bankruptcy because Detroit mainly gets its income from property taxes because people are basically walking off and leaving their houses. But that's the point. These all go together. The people who are smart are saying, I will suffer through a bankruptcy or whatever I need to do. And Ed loves that. You know,
yeah.
Ed Laughlin immediately jumps on that one. And that's why he's advertising. And the point is, these people saying, okay, I'll take the bankruptcy hit, because when you go bankrupt and you get the debts written off, by the way, let's say you had a $100,000 house and you ultimately washed out this $100,000 loan. Guess what? You just got $100,000 of income that you got to pay taxes on. But if you're effectively broke, you don't have an income tax bracket. Anyway, these people are moving away and taking jobs elsewhere. That's good news.
The 2 points, one quick point, is that this is another example of how we are completely different than Europe.
Because, rather than incompletely different.
Yes. In Europe, if they have a center of manufacturing and export, we'll say Northern Ireland, because that's what they were doing there. When that town failed, rather than staying in Ireland, they came to the United States. That's why the people in Detroit had so many Irish last names.
Oh, well, they also had Italian last names.
Right. Well, because when the manufacturing in Italy fell off, they came to the United States.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
When Detroit is failing, you don't hear about a bunch of Americans packing up and going to Canada or to Mexico or to Tahiti.
Not that they would do them a lot of good.
No, they are moving to another city in the United States because they know that here is the best place to get a job. And the second point is that, again, completely different than Europe. If you look at Europe, their education system, their college education system has fewer people enrolled now than they did in 2007.
Oh, they've got it's because they've come up with a solution to unemployment.
What's that?
It's a long-term solution. It's a really good one.
Did you just pay them?
No. In Italy and Spain, where the highest unemployment is, they're just not having babies.
Right. Oh, that'll stop that. Okay.
So if give it enough time, there won't be any workers, so there won't be any, don't have to worry about the jobs.
The point here about the education is that in America, enrollment during the recession went way up, and people going back to school were a big part of that.
Mm-hmm.
Retraining, retooling, trying to figure out how to use this new technology so that they can get a job. In Europe, they're just saying, well, the government will keep paying me. And the government's not paying them to go to school. We actually had, and this is one of the few things where a government subsidy was pretty important. When people lost their jobs, unemployment was still paid to them if they went back to school. That's the reason for unemployment, to find a new job.
Right.
Get good at something else and go get another job. That's fine. I like that. But when you just pay somebody to sit at home and do nothing, I don't like that at all.
You know, we've been talking about, and you mentioned this last week, about the balance that the United States is both literally and figuratively halfway between Europe and China.
Yeah.
Actually, we're a little closer to Europe.
Yeah, but closer to Europe than China, but yes.
You know, the point is that in Europe, they have such wonderful social safety nets that when you lose your job, you don't even notice.
Right.
Except you don't go to work.
You just
Although,
sit back and relax.
From what
Get
I
on a dole.
From what I understand, there are a lot of Europeans who, while they had their jobs, weren't going to work.
Correct. Yeah.
Now,
there's a big strike right now going on in France.
Did anyone notice?
Well, I saw it, so obviously it's been noticed a little bit.
Right.
But not by many people.
Well, obviously the news media didn't go on strike.
But this is the big, big thing. They're striking because they're not allowed to work on Saturdays, and they want to.
Got that.
That's the opposite of the strikes that were taking place 2 years ago.
Does that mean we go on an anti-strike because we have to work on Saturdays?
We would go on a strike. I just find it incredibly humorous that they've stopped work because they want to work.
Now for the French mind, that is
makes sense.
Perfectly normal.
Usually they stop work because they want to work less. Now they're stopping work because they want to work more, and that's even more confusing
to me. China has no safety net.
None. Not even in its trapeze work.
Europe has a safety net that is so powerful that that's, by the way, why people are not immigrating out of Europe.
Right, because they don't need to. They just sit back and let the people that are working in Europe pay for them.
And the whole continent goes broke. But in the United States, we have this sort of balance.
Or let the Germans pay for them. That's what they'll do.
Well, yeah.
Sit at home and let the Germans pay their wages.
But it used to be, by the way, in Europe, the birth rate was the other way around. The northern European countries, the ones that have more money, were having fewer children than the southern countries.
Now it's the other way around.
It's actually reversed. And it's an interesting thing because in the United States, this is what's a fascinating thing. In the United States, when you have unemployment, we wind up with more kids.
Yeah.
It's cause, a pastime about 9 thing. Months
there's,
later.
There's a lot of stuff that you can do it when you've got free time on your hand. That's
But in Europe, Europe is in deep long-term trouble. Not as bad as Japan. Japan is the population is aging very quickly.
At what speed? Is it faster than what we age?
Yes, as a nation.
As a nation, the nation is getting older faster
because
than we are.
Yeah,
true, because they're having fewer babies.
Many families in Japan are having no babies. The difference is they're not having huge quantities of other people immigrate into their country.
I was just wondering, because today I age a day at a time. I was just hoping that they didn't do it 2 days at a time in Japan.
Well,
that would be...
Actually, nations don't age quite that fast.
Right.
They age a little slower than that. But the point is that both China and Japan are headed towards some great discomfort down the road. So is Europe. Strictly from demographics, they simply, if you look at the percentage of the population that's working age, in all three of those economies, and those are the three economies that are, the United States has the largest economy in the world, the three...
Until you throw in the European Union,
no,
but that's not really...
No, the whole European Union is not as big an economy as the United States, I think. I may be wrong, but I think they're behind us. I know we're the biggest exporters in the world, and I think we have the biggest economy. China is, I think, number two at this point. European Union either... Well, the four largest economies.
I think the European Union doesn't count as an economy altogether.
Anyway.
Because if it did, it's actually larger than the United States.
Well, the Eurozone is what I was actually looking at.
Even the Eurozone, it isn't really one economy. It's lots of little economies.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, the point is that the four major economies in the world, and we'll count the European Union,
about
China,
one,
Japan, and the United States.
European Union's about $1 trillion more than the United States as far as... So all of Europe, the European Union, everybody, all those countries, that European Union includes Britain well, and Germany and all of that, they're about $1 trillion more.
But the issue is that of the major developed economies in the world, the United States is the only one where the working age population is still getting larger, and we have, interestingly enough, also a growing participation.
Radio 1400 KTEM.
And we got news. And we'll be back next hour with more of the First World.
KTEM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.